And I've never enjoyed preaching the empty pews, and so I'm glad you're here to fill those pews. To our guests, the row of sisters here in the back, we're so glad you're here. And there's a lot of churches in this town, and we're honored that you're here tonight and worshiping with us. Thank you for being here. Then for Pastor E.J. Swatzel back here of Waymaker Church. So good to see you tonight, my brother. Pastor EJ is coaching my girls' volleyball team, Maria, and boy, he's got his work cut out for her. I've told my wife and two daughters, now you got to get her playing volleyball well. I'll get Sam playing t-ball well. And boy, I tell you, to coach a young team like that, you really just have to have a guilt complex. It's like purgatory being out there. I went to the first practice, and Sam hit the ball and ran to first, and then he turned and went to second. And, of course, it was a wide turn, and I wasn't so sure if he's going to second or to center field. And I yelled out in this crowd, "Go to second, you knucklehead." And everybody looked at me like I was the worst parent at home. And I said, that's the way we talk in our house. But I'm going to have to cool it, is what I'm going to have to do. I want to direct your attention back to Luke chapter 15 this evening. And as Paul Harvey would say, give you the rest of the story. And I want to begin reading in verse 20 down through verse 32. Speaking of the prodigal son, Jesus says in verse 20 that he arose and came to his father. And when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight and am no more worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Bring out the best robe and put it on him and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to make merry. Now his older son was in the field. And as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of his servants and asked them what these things meant. And he said to him, "Your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf." But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and pleaded with him. So he answered and said to his father, "Lo, these many years I have been serving you. I've never transgressed your commandment at any time. And yet you never gave me a young goat that I may make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him." And he said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found." Many of you have heard a lot of different sermons in your life, and maybe you've heard a lot of different sermons from this text. And one of the things that you pick up even subconsciously as you listen to sermons is you get an idea of when the preacher's made a mistake in his preaching. You get an idea that maybe he's chased a rabbit and there's no way he can get out of that. He's then a dead end and he's got to turn around and come back. You get an idea of when the preacher is struggling, when he's fighting to think about what to say next. And you just get a feel of the ebbs and flow of preaching. And one of the things I think that you've probably been aware of as you've listened to preachers is when the preacher missed his off-ramp. He's preaching and he's got it lined up. He's got the sermon coming in for a landing, and it's going to be a good landing. And lo and behold, he goes and he makes another lap around the airport, and now he's lost and he can't get his way back home. And it was a good sermon. It was looking good, but then he lost his way. And there's a sense in which when you look at this text, you think that Jesus has lost his way. He has it lined up. He's just about ready for Peter to come up and sing Just As I Am and have a good altar call. He's got the son in the far country, and he's come to his senses, and he's repented, and he's coming down the road, and the father goes out, throws his arms around him, kisses him, hugs him, put the sandal on his feet, put the ring on his finger, and now it's time to kill the fatted calf. And the implication is that's the way God feels about prodigal sons. So if you are a prodigal here today, why don't you come back to your father? Peter, come on up here and sing Just As I Am. Give these people an opportunity to respond. Jesus gets there, and then there he goes. But then there was this other son. It's like, so anticlimactic. Boom. There's this other son. He's in the field, and he's mad about his son coming home. He won't come in. He's very angry about the situation. And so the father has to go out and plead with him. And we don't know if he came in the house or not. I mean, you want to think about a bad conclusion, that's it. I mean, you don't even know what happened. But what we know is that Jesus is the greatest preacher to ever preach a sermon. We know that Jesus didn't make mistakes like that. There's no one greater in speaking the mind of God than Jesus, because he was God in the flesh. And so we know he didn't make a mistake. And so then we have to go back and think through the sermon. Why is that the right place to end that sermon? And when you go back to the beginning, it becomes clear to you. Again, there's a lost sheep in the field. There's a lost coin in the house. There's a lost son in the field. Oh, I get it. There's a lost son in the house. Sheep is the younger son, the coin is the older son, and he started out talking to Pharisees. He started out talking to religious people, and he ends by talking to religious people. He comes full circle, and he says, now, do y'all understand why I'm doing what I'm doing? I love lost people. As a shepherd will go after one lost sheep and leave the 99, as a woman will go after one coin and leave the 9 on the dresser, 1%, 10%, so I'll go after 100% of the children who have left me. And the question is, what will those of you who claim to follow me do? Will you go as well? The parable ends in that way. I have to admit to you that this older son has my sympathy. In fact, when I was in school, I had to preach a sermon, and it had to be graded. And the sermon had to be a first-person narrative sermon. In other words, I had to take a person in the Bible and I had to act like I was them and preach that sermon. And I chose the older son because my heart is with him. Because when you think about what he's feeling, to me it's so rational how he responds. Because here's his younger brother, and what the younger brother did was a repulsive sin. I mean, the magnitude of the sin of this younger brother who comes to the father and says, give me what's due me so I can go out and spend it. I don't even have the words. I'm trying to find the words. It was a nasty thing to do. Let me put it that way. Because even the text says that the father divided his living. It wasn't his money. It was his living. That land. And it was land that had to be divided up. And the land would have been in the family for hundreds and hundreds of years. The people were people of the land. And when somebody wants to sell land quickly, guess what they get for it? They get pennies on the dollar. If you want it now, if you can't wait, you're going to sell it for half of what it's worth. That land was valuable. It represented the life's work of the Father, and he said, give it to me. The land had to be sold. He gives it to the Father. And in one way, he's wishing the Father was dead. You don't come to your parent and ask your parent, say, well, I know you're going to die sometime. I just want to know what's in it for me. I mean, when you talk to your parent, if you talk to your parent about what's in the will, they got to open the conversation. If they say, now, I want you to know we went to the lawyer and we've drawn it up, and I want you kids to know how it's divided up and what we've decided. You listen and you say thank you, because they don't have to put you in the will. They could give it to the cat. You don't have to be in the will. Yeah, you don't have any rights to what your parent has. Go earn it yourself. So you say thank you. You don't ask them what's in it for me. Just the insult of what this boy did and the stupidity of what he did. And then the response of the father. I mean, even preachers who preach this text say, and I've heard them say often, now, this is telling you about God, but don't you do this with your children. It's a bad idea. If they want to go to the far country, if they want to go waste their life with prostitutes and whiskey, don't give them your credit card to do it with. But this is what the father does. You know, you can imagine the older son standing there saying, oh man, you're going to give him the credit card? You're not going to beat the snot out of this guy? What? I mean, the magnitude of the sin, the response of the father. And then when the son comes back, if you're the older son, you're sitting there saying, you know, he's only back because he ran out of money. He didn't come back till he had to come back. If you're the older son, you're sitting there saying, it's not a legit repentance. I mean, this dude's hitting the altar because his wife left him and he just lost custody of his kids. That's why he's down here, and I'm willing to pray with him, but I'm not willing to bring him back in the house and give him the credit card again. Yeah. So when you're the older son, is all the past. You wonder if the kid's legit. And then, see, what's the younger guy going to live on? Because he wasted his inheritance. Who does all the other stuff belong to now? The older son. So the father is, in essence, asking the older son, he wasted all of his stuff, but I think we ought to bring him home and let him live off your stuff. And if you're the older son, it's like, that's a tough pill to swallow. I like the older son. I can sympathize with him. He's the kind of guy that I hope that my daughters have the sense to marry someday. Because you can say what you want to about him, But he was in the field. He was working. He had a work ethic about him. He was responsible. He didn't waste the money. He knew how to run a farm. He knew how to work by the sweat of his brow. He was the kind of guy who wouldn't take what he had and go down and waste it in Newport. He's the kind of guy that you hope your daughter has the good sense to fall in love with, and you pray to God that she doesn't fall in love with somebody like the younger son. He's the kind of guy you vote for. If he runs for office, you vote for that guy, man. That guy's got his act together. That guy's put together well. And yet, you see the passage. In the eyes of the Father, he stands condemned. He's a guy who is lost in the house. Question is, because you and I sit in the house today, how do you know you're him? How do you know that in spite of all the good about you, your work ethic, the fact that you're upright, the fact that in some way you can legitimately say, although I think you would say falsely, I've never broken the commandments. How does a person so righteous end up condemned by God? Well, let's think about that here. Notice, first of all, if you want to talk about the characteristics of the older son, notice, first of all, verse 28, where it says that he was angry and would not come in. And as he talks about his anger, you get the sense there's a lot of anger that's been beneath the surface. You almost get the sense that he's been angry since the father divided up the inheritance. There is in the older son a perpetual anger beneath the surface. And that is symptomatic of 21st century older sons that are lost in the house. There's a way in which you can be a believer, and to the rest of the world, you look like you are serving the Lord. But you're really not serving the Lord, you're serving your own interest. It's really not out of a heart of gratitude that you serve God. There's a sense in which you're serving Him for what's in it for you in a way. And because you serve that way, there's always an anger beneath the surface. I mean, the elder sons in the church would say, you know what, I've been brought here since I was a kid. I love serving the Lord. There's joy in the service of the Lord. It's a delight to work here. I enjoy doing things. I love volunteering. I don't know why anybody doesn't love working for the Lord. If you ask them, or if something happens and they're no longer teaching, maybe they've taught that class for many years. If they're no longer teaching, or if they're no longer getting recognized, or if they're no longer getting the pats on the back, you're going to find that right beneath the surface with an older son is a lot of anger. The service is to be recognized. And if they ever feel forgotten or taken for granted, you're going to have grounds to ask why they were really working to begin with. There's an anger that's beneath the surface. Here he is, and he's saying, I've worked at this farm for years, and I've never taken any pay. I've never taken something. And the implication is, what I expected was recognition. You never killed a goat for me. You never said thank you like you should have to me. You've never had the older Sunday. I've never been on the platform. I've never got the applause. And I'm not happy about it. The older son doesn't work for the joy that they proclaim that they work for. They work for the recognition. And when the recognition is slow in coming, you're going to see that that riles them. It pricks them. It's like they've got, a burr under their shirt. Riles them. Secondly, you look at this guy and there's duty without joy. All these years I've been working for you. Never broke the commandments. You've never done anything for me. He's got the duty. He has been working. He has been at it. And if he hadn't been working, the prodigal son wouldn't have a farm to come home to. Why do you think there was something for him to come home to? Because the older son stayed where he was supposed to be. So there's this great sense of duty. And again, I'm sympathetic. I am sympathetic to the people in the church who stay through the good times and the bad times, who weather their dry spells, who just stay in there. They put the tithe in the plate. They work. They show up. It's not easy. The ebbs and flows come, and they're determined that there's going to be a church here for their children. But even when you have duty, you got to have joy with it. This guy's out there working, but there's no joy in it. He's not saying, boy, I get to work on the farm. Can you believe I had the good fortune of growing up with a rich daddy? Everybody else is out there working, and I own the farm. Isn't it great to get to work for a place that has good benefits? I'm in the Father's care. I get to walk in the house. I sleep in the house. The servants sleep out there in the quarters. But isn't it great to be in the Father's house like I am? Don't think about that. I mean, the older sons, they don't say, I've been saved. I've been delivered. God has brought me into His family. I get to work at the only thing that has eternal value. It's hard life, but everybody's life is hard. Everybody is working. Everybody is struggling. But I'm doing it for something that matters, to see people go to heaven. Thank the Lord that I am a co-laborer with God. It's not part of his dichotomy. It's not where he's at. I mean, the older sons work hard. But they really struggle with worship. The older sons will bust their bottoms on the work days. But come worship time, you wonder if they're hard at hearing. I mean, they're working hard, but there seems to not be a great relationship between them and the Father. It's a lot of duty, not much joy. And then third, there's the moral superiority. This son of yours, look what he did. I'm better than him. I mean, it would never cross an older son's mind that it was their sins that put Jesus on the cross too. When you and I say that Jesus Christ died for me, we're saying that my sins were so bad that nothing short of the death of the Son of God could save me. That's my sin. If Jesus hadn't died for me, my stuff's so nasty, my heart's so twisted, my life is so messed up that I would be lost, I'd go to hell if Jesus hadn't did that for me. I look at people and say, wow, they're low down and nasty, but me, you know. Jesus had to die for them, but you know, a little drop of blood would have been enough for me. He could have cut his finger for me, you know. I heard a guy talking once, and I heard the preacher talking about this guy, and the guy said, well, when I get to heaven, I hope God gives me justice. The preacher said, oh, dear Lord, no. When I get there, it's mercy, mercy, mercy. Don't give me justice. Mercy, mercy, mercy. There's that moral superiority there. And the bottom line is this, that the older son does not share the father's heart. The younger son is out of relationship with the father. The older son is out of sympathy with the heart of the father. The father loves his lost son. The father loves to see people redeemed. The father loves to see the prodigal come home. He loves to see his family all in one place. That's what drives the father. That's why he's standing there, out there on the porch, waiting for that son to come home, looking for that gate to cross the ridge of the hill. And the older son just doesn't share that. Just doesn't share it. He's in the house. He's a hard worker. But he doesn't have the heart of God. And that's why he's a prodigal. Older son's lost in the house. See, and we have to program ourselves to think this way. I don't think we think this way naturally. There's different ways to die. Follow me here. I mean, I've been on hikes, and in my thinking, the worst way to die is to be mauled by a bear. That'd be the worst way to go. It's much uglier than saying bit by a poisonous spider in your sleep. If you're bit by a poisonous spider in your sleep, you look beautiful. Got bad breath, but you look beautiful. I mean, you just got nicked and the poison went in and, you know, it's a pretty way to die. Being mauled by a bear, I mean, that's a closed casket, you know. But you're still dead. Either way, there's ugly ways to die spiritually and there's pretty ways to be dead spiritually. But in the end, you're dead. And I admit, you know, going down and losing your sanity, Newport or Knoxville, and going on a bender and getting pulled over with a DUI and going to jail and ending up getting divorced and losing your kids, that's an ugly way to go down. It's not as pretty as being on a church pew and being self-righteous. But you're both dead. One got mauled by a bear, one got bit by a spider, but you're equally dead. You know, I joke with guys when I golf that, you know, it's very frustrating because this happens to me a lot. You hit a pretty drive, you hit a great second shot, you get a decent putt, and then you miss a 3-foot putt. And you're playing with a person. They hit a lousy drive, they're in the woods, their second shot's in the woods, but the grace of God falls on them on the third shot. They hit it close to the hole, and they get a 4, and you got a 4. And I tell them, my par is so much, it was so much prettier than your par, man. It was beautiful. Yours was ugly. But it's still a par. There are pretty ways to be spiritually dead. There are ugly ways to be spiritually dead. But you're still dead. Parable ends, and it ends without an ending. And I think there's three possible endings. One is hinted at in Scripture. And that is, the father goes out for the second time. He leaves his house to go to his son. Notice the compassion. I mean, the man stands condemned, but the father is out there just like he was with the younger son, saying, "Son, come on, I love you. It's all yours, man. Come on in. This isn't going to be a party if you're not there with me." He has as much love for the older son as he does for the younger son. And so, well, there's a big party, but the father is out in the field saying, "Come on, son, come on." One way the story could have ended, if there had been another verse, is that the younger son is, or the older son is so mad, he takes up a cross-shaped club and beats his father to death. Now, that's what happened in the Bible. The religious people picked up a cross, and God in the flesh, they killed him with the cross and they hung him. People listening to Jesus, that's essentially what they did. Second thing that could have happened was that the older son got so angry. He says, "Father, give me what's coming to me. I'm leaving. I can't stay here." Of course, what the father wants is for the older son to go into the party and to rejoice with him that someone who was thought dead is now alive. And those of us who have grown up in the church and are far more likely to be older sons than younger sons, we have to deal with that. We can be angry that God saves lost people. See lost people as an inconvenience to our pretty church. Or we can get so mad that things are happening in our church because so many lost people are coming in that we say, "Well, I'm leaving the church, man. I'm walking out of here." Can you believe all those lost people? Who stole my church? Or we can say, "God, I want to rejoice in what you rejoice in. You're the one, when one person gets saved, you get off your throne, you throw your crown in the air, and you get all the angels around you to rejoice. There's a party in heaven when one person, even when they come back after they've wasted everything, maybe they wouldn't have even come back if they hadn't hit bottom, but whatever got them back, they came back, and I want to be part of the rejoicing with you." You and I have that decision to make in our lives. See, it's really not about two boys, it's about three, right? There's the older son, there's the younger son, and there's the third son, the son who told the story, Jesus Christ. And Jesus was the one who went to the cross to see people like you and I, older sons, younger sons, won back to the Father. He was the true older brother. He did what the older brother should have done. He came looking for us. He came to the far country. You and I ought to have the heart of the one who died for us, right? Amen. All right, stand with me. God bless you.